Welcome to KHC Podcasts, where we are here to help you manage your own health.
Welcome back to the Life Train Program. This is my second go at reading the second part of the Life Train Program, and I'm determined now to cut this into two parts. The first part, I think we'll deal with one half of the second part of the Life Train Program, if that makes sense, and then we'll do the second part of the second part later. One of the first difficulties I have with regard to the Life Train Program was the way it was presented on paper, is that you've got a nice diagram, and as they said, diagram paints a thousand words. The diagram then, I would hope that you'd have this on your knee as we would go through this. And it describes the interrelationship between behaviours, or more importantly, micro-behaviours, the feelings that generates inside our body of us doing these things, and then the overriding thoughts that we have. We have thoughts which allows our behaviours to continue on, largely uncontested. And then we'll have little stories in behind that about the way the world works and what we believe, and that these thoughts will spring to mind in the context of a feeling, and then how this contributes largely to the overall state of affairs, that interrelationship they have between our past, our future, ourselves, and other people. So the attempt then is to read the Life Train Program. We're going to read half of the Life Train Program in the first instance, and I'm going to make some sort of comments on it then as well, to see if that can be, well, not miss the opportunity in an attempt to be helpful as people work their way through it. The comment I would make is the Life Train Program was from some time ago, and in actual fact, what we would call talking therapies has developed at a pace since the Life Train Program was initially composed. So, and there's various emphasis is applied to various things now, which is the way that we would largely do this. So I have noticed that there are sorts of areas within the Life Train Program as written may be unnecessarily confusing, but we can iron those things out in this podcast. So straight in, this is the second installment of the Life Train Program. It's called More About Life Train, after having the first one. And there's the diagram, and now we're going to talk about an explanation around behavior, which I think is really quite important. So behavior is a word that needs a little bit more explanation. We often think about behavior as activity that we undertake that has a purpose. We describe behavior often by the purpose that we believe it brings about. For instance, we might describe shopping as a behavior. This is not really a good way to think about behavior. It is important that when we think about behavior or talk about it in the Life Train Program, that we all think about behavior in the same way. When we think about behavior in the Life Train Program, we prefer to describe behavior as anything that a dead person cannot do. This is a better way to think about behavior, since it includes all interactions that a person has with the world he or she lives in, even a behavior that has no apparent purpose at all. So every little movement our body makes is a behavior, and the only way the body can make a behavior is make a movement is because it's connected to a nervous system that has learned these patterns. So perhaps the word microbehavior is useful, since this means even the most insignificant little movement or reaction can be considered a behavior. Again, the only thing that's initiating that behavior is your nervous system. The next thing is feelings, right, which is the next heading in our little diagram. So we have behavior, which is connected to feelings. As Antonio Damasio described it, it is the feeling of what happens. So feelings. There's a lot of confusion between feelings and emotions. And we know that there are six universal emotions: happiness, sadness, fear, anger, surprise, and disgust. But there are millions of feelings. Human beings feel an emotion when it is happening. So emotions are themselves behaviors, reactions to the outside world, which we feel happening to our bodies. It is not important to study the difference between emotions and feelings in the Life Train program, but it's probably worth including the distinction here, if only to satisfy the curious and, of course, for completeness. So simply put, the six emotions are what everyone feels no matter where they are in the world that they live or were reared. Life's experiences do not teach us emotions. They are not learned. Rather, they are part of our biology, and many would suggest are reactions that our bodies have by virtue of the fact that we are alive as human beings. There is evidence to show that all living creatures have emotions, but only humans have feelings. An emotion produces feelings of that emotion in humans. When emotions happen in insects, there is no evidence that they feel the effects of that emotion happening in their insect body. A useful thing was that they did this in primitive organisms, you know, something like a prawn, and then when you poke it, right, with a cocktail stick when it's in its environment, then it will wince, or, you know, it will curl up, it will try to avoid the prick of the sharp object, the adverse or noxious stimulus. It will recoil. So that, in all intents and purposes, would be emotion if the prawn could feel it happening to itself, right? So the prawn will feel, if the prawn was capable of feeling what it is that its body is doing, and what it is its body is doing is trying to defend itself from a cocktail stick. But if it feels that, then it is an emotion. So emotion is the feeling of a collection of defensive behaviors that we have essentially learned to do. Whereas a feeling, in all intents and purposes, is just the feeling of what happens, that our bodies are doing something and engaging with something which is entirely appropriate for us, and our feelings are in the background letting us know that that's what's happening. The big problem, of course, is we get so used to all of that happening that we actually become averse to or resist the fact that something else could happen, that there are other feelings out there that we could do. But we don't really let ourselves do those sorts of things because, one, we're not programmed to do them. And secondly, if we were to do them, our head will then tell us, well, that's not what we normally do, so that cannot be the right thing. So in the Life Frame program, that's the sort of change that we're hoping to encourage people to have, actually the courage to do or to experiment with. So moving on in the diagram then to the next part, which is the emotionally equivalent conclusion. So you have behaviors causing feelings. What do feelings then cause? Well, feelings cause something to happen to our thoughts. We copy and learn to repeat micro behaviors without any awareness that this is happening. So we've got that. Then we remember that every micro behavior produces a feeling in our body, the feeling of it happening. And the feelings that these micro behaviors produce steer our thinking, so we are more readily accept thoughts to be true if the story of those thoughts match what we're feeling. So at the end of the day, if we have a negative feeling inside our body, we will have a negative thought in our head. If we have a happy and uplifting and fulfilling feeling in our body, then our thoughts will be happy and uplifted and enabling. So here's the trick. Try listening for emotionally equivalent conclusions in what other people are saying to you. this will be difficult at first, because when someone talks directly to you, your thoughts will also be affected by how your body automatically reacts to them, their presence, their attempt in order to communicate to you. You will react to them. The best way forward is to make sure your body is relaxed, not reacting automatically. This is like switching off the autopilot and just making sure you're not reacting in a way that the other person would normally provoke you to react. Just stay in neutral. So at first, this is a lot easier if the person you're talking to does not know you very well, like a shop assistant, right? A bus driver, the new postman, right? Since they don't know you very well, then you have more freedom in order to be however you'd like to be that day. With someone you know well, it is probably better, but not essential, to first explain that you're doing this. I am behaving differently today as an experiment to see how I get on with it. That might start actually quite an interesting conversation. So when you're setting yourself down to listen to another person's emotionally equivalent conclusions, what it is that they're saying, you should be listening for statements that, taken quite literally, could not possibly be true. For example, I never get any time for myself these days. It's hard to know what that actually means. Or, I need a holiday. What do you need a holiday for? What are you expecting a holiday to do? You know, what are you thinking about when you think you need this holiday? What is your expectation of a holiday? What do you need it to do for you, right? Or, life was getting on top of me lately. Life is getting on top. Where is the top? Where is the bottom? What do you mean on top? Right. So these things are not necessarily as easily to understand as you might think. So when we consider what is actually meant by these statements, it becomes obvious that many do not actually make a literal sense. And this is particularly obvious when statements use words like always or never or all of the time. You always do that. I never get any of that, right? You do that all of the time. Statements with these words are easy to see. They cannot be true. But these statements are not intended to mislead. They are offered as clues about how someone's feeling at the time when they say them. So people are telling you what they feel. They're having thoughts inside their head that is conducting a message in them about how they are actually feeling, not about the state of the world. So we call these thoughts allegorical, which means that they point indirectly to the feelings which are real enough but are difficult to describe exactly. If it was possible for the statement to be true, then we would know exactly how the person saying them feels. So in the diagram then, once you're fair on your, hopefully it's on your knee, you've got behaviors and micro behaviors, you get the opportunity to find how that feels. And then these feelings that are so normal for us, we don't even notice that they're happening in large part until we pay attention. Actually, they have an effect on our thinking. So our thinking tends to go in the sense of what we feel. And then allegorical explanations are the sorts of thoughts we have in our head about why it is what we're thinking is true. Right? So we'll read that wee bit. Allegorical thinking, the as if rule. It's important to realize that our thoughts are allegories. That's the word we're going to use. A useful way of describing allegories is that they are as if stories. When, for instance, someone says, my partner doesn't understand me, it makes very little literal sense. My partner doesn't understand me. What does that mean? But if we use the as if rule, we can convert the statement into, I feel as if my partner doesn't understand me. And it makes a whole lot more sense. We then get a very useful clue as to how that person is feeling. There's another effect of this as-if rule. The as-if rule means that this explanation that we're giving ourselves for why it is that we're feeling, the explanation for why they feel the way that they do, it's not actually correct. This partner is probably like any other partner, and that he or she is only included in the story to throw light on the way that the person is feeling. The partner will be included in the explanation because her partner knows about him or her. He or she does not know, nor do they admit that the way that the way they feel is caused by the reactions to life that person has learned. So you can react to the world in all sorts of ways, but people are predictable. They will react in certain ways to certain things, and that comes from their past. And when you ask them why they do that, they'll give you a very clear explanation of why it is that they do it. And believe it or not, depression and negative thoughts and defeat and despair is like that as well. You feel the feeling, and then your head is going to fall full of all the reasons why that feeling is the feeling that you have no other choice but do. Your head is having the thoughts in it, right? Which, and those thoughts are created or mirror the feeling that you have, but they're not the cause of it. Habits of life are the cause of it, the things that we have been given the opportunity to learn, and that has been seriously affected by things like trauma. So problems only begin when we agree that the behavior of the partner needs to be discussed, rather than the person who's complaining their behavior and how this has come about. So they just remove the focus from complaining about the world that it is to the focus on being, why is it in these sets of circumstances, of all the thoughts that can appear in the world and of all the feelings that can appear in the world, why the person is having this negative feeling and why that negative feeling is supported inevitably by a negative thought about what way the world is. This is what we're hoping to change in the Life Train program. So allegories or as-if explanations of why we feel the way we do cause enormous problems when we take them as being literally true. They will mask the real causes of our feelings and rather unfortunately allow the behavior or behaviors to continue for years without being unearthed, even when they exercise a very negative outcome on the person who suffers from them. So we dutifully adhere to these allegorical explanations as though they were the correct interpretation of our circumstances, rather than only being accurate about our feelings when we follow the as-if rule. And this is particularly true for unhealthy behaviors. Okay, I think we could probably split the second part of the Life Train program into two, because that's quite a lot in order to take in. There's quite a bit of homework in that, a lot of observations. I think it's useful, as we have proved to be very useful in the Life Train program, you get the opportunity to listen to the podcast, this first part of the Life Train program, or first the second part of the Life Train program, to listen to that over again so that the thoughts tend to sink in and you get some opportunity to practice or listen to other people's conversations or what it is that they're doing, whilst you have this little journey inside yourself of what sort of sense that you're going to make of this, right? And you don't really know, because okay, nobody can tell the future, but if you practice what it is that are the thoughts within this first part of the second part of the Life Train program, if that's not too confusing, then that would be useful. And then we can move on then to the second part of the second part, which, so I'll create a little gap there, and we'll get back to the second part of the second part in the next podcast. Okay, best of luck with it. Thank you very much.